to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks, that's Molly, Mr. Matt Weber. SB Futures up 8.25. NASDAQ Futures up 35. Dow Futures up 112. Individual stocks, we got Boeing up $4. That's interesting. Frank, how are you?
I'm very good.
So let me get this straight. If I went to Boeing and I want to buy a plane, I don't want one that's been sitting on the runway for a year. Can I do that?
Do people really buy planes or do they lease them?
I'm going to say there probably is somebody that walks up with a check, but I don't know who. That's why I constantly am ragging on United Airlines and why when they give them all this money that they should all, everybody on the board should be. Ever since they 2007, 2008, when they've done nothing but make money, I don't think, I think the entire amount of money they made. I did this calculation once, but it was a while ago, so I won't be like I just did it yesterday, but I think virtually all the money that they made in the last 12 years, which has been the best years airlines have ever had, and I think it all went to buy the stock back, or like 90% of it, some huge number. And, you know, you would think that once a year you'd show up at Boeing and say, we'll just buy this one, here's a check. They never did. That isn't to say that, when the business was good and they went and bought, some planes, some other people that were 10 and 12 years old, tied them over, 15 years old, that they didn't pay for those. You know, I don't know if they leased those or not, but, and pretty much the standard is that they lease everything. Cause you get the, I think it's probably better tax wise. That's why when the airlines are doing crummy, they do crummy very, very rapidly, and they're doing good. They do good very rapidly in terms of cash flow. They're always on the edge. And that whole management style needs to, if we're going to bail them out every 10 years or 20 years, I think that whole management style needs to go. But that's just me. There doesn't seem to be, what do you mean? If the lobbyist gets to you and you write the check, you don't ever follow it up. I mean, I'm stunned. There's great wailing and gnashing of teeth among the Republicans. And, you know, I think probably, some of the Democrats that probably didn't know it was there. But this last thing they slipped in this bill, well, probably a lot of last things they slipped in the bill, has to do with the states that are getting all this money, that they're prohibited from lowering taxes. And, of course, you know, some of the Republicans, rightly so, I guess the thing is so poorly written that one of the governors said, I was listening to yesterday, said we just put through a bill where we want to lower the cost of your driver either getting a title for a car or lowering the sticker, the price for a sticker that goes on the car, because he said it's the most regressive tax out there. And you want somebody to get a job and go to work, and you're going to stick them with all these. I mean, the guy should come over and be the governor of Illinois. I mean, here it's. What did my study, Maddie? What was my study the one time that if you got a job here and somebody gave you the money for the car and insurance and all the other stuff, it was and you were making minimum wage, your first 60 hours of work went for the money to transfer the car and the taxes and the title and stuff, the sticker. I mean, that's special.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said, what does that mean? But then again, now you come down to enforcement, Frank. And one thing that I think you're probably the Catholic, well, not just say the Catholic parents, but just any parents back in the 50s or 60s, you know, and should we say any rule implied enforcement, right? of some kind. And my high school history teacher said, if there's going to be a law, there's got to be enforcement. He goes, all I see these days, and this is in the 60s, he goes, all I see these days when somebody comes up with a stupid law and somebody says, well, nobody's ever going to enforce it anyway, he goes, the promise of lack of enforcement is never a good reason for a law. Right? I mean, but we hear it all the time. Now, how can these guys put that in there when a month ago, Lori Lightfoot took $281 million from the COVID money and stuck it to the police department and nothing happened to her? So, I mean, they didn't stop giving it to Chicago. They didn't throw out of office. They didn't throw her in jail. They just let it go. Is it because she's a Democrat or what? So now, who the hell is going to enforce this, that, that, you know, the city of Rapid City, South Dakota, lowers a parking meter fee? I mean, are we kidding? I mean, so the people who write this crap, what is their purpose, Frank? If there's no enforcement, there's no, you know, unless we are going to have like the Lori Lightfoot, you know, how many people are sitting in your bar police? How many people in Chicago, I'm teed off on this, and I went to one of my favorite places Friday night, and all they got is there's two chairs at one spot in the bar, and it's free in the other, and if you stand next to the two people, if you happen to know the two people that are sitting there, they get all in a tizzy that they've had like a ticket for that. Can't stand at a bar and only can be two people there. I mean, why don't we take all these people? Do you think the population would rather take those people and put them in like carjacker hunt or shooting on the expressway hunt than have them running around tormenting regular citizens? Just saying.
If you carjackers don't pay taxes.
They don't pay taxes, no. But they're really good boys, and they shouldn't have any kind of bond, right, or anything like that. They should just, if they do get caught, just let them go right away, right? That's the new mantra.
So what? That's for both parties, actually.
Yeah, you're. By the way, your phone.
Yeah, I listened to Johnson talk about the Capitol invasion. They're good people. They believe in following the law.
Yeah. Hey, you. What are you? You got your head in an ash can this morning? You're like a reverb unit. Where are you standing? Like I said.
Just a minute.
What'd you do to Frank, man? I'm just saying. Anyway, so Boeing obviously is flying way up there, up to 274. Where did they bottom out?
Is this better?
That's much better.
Much better.
You know, you're over 65. Why can't you get a landline for nothing?
I'm over 70.
Then you should be able to get a landline for free.
Oh, is that what works? That.
Well, you know, I'm just saying.
And you say you're in the middle. That sounds like you're on the far left. Give me something for free.
No, I'm just saying. I think the only way you can get like a regular landline is if you're over 65.
It's a landline on in your yard. That's it. Then it connects to the internet.
Yeah, well, I'm saying if you want, I think AT&T is still forced to put a copper one in if you're old, I think. I'm not positive. That's the way it used to be, but try and find it on their website.
No, I don't want to do it. Well, maybe if it's free, I'll do it.
I guess you were one of those guys in the trading floor that was their motto. If it's free, it's for me.
No.
Hey, I have a question.
I didn't go to meetings, even though there were free shrimp.
I did some of those.
I know you did. I never did.
Well, any committee you had, there always were cookies and all the other stuff at the meetings.
The same cookies they had in the pay gaff, so no thanks.
Yeah, they were actually pretty good. Not that I ever had one, but hey, I got a question for you. She refuses to be called a right winger, but one of Audrey's pals, actually one of my pals, we get into this discussion with her yesterday, and it was interesting because I watched the Cubs last night. Are you going to say, how the hell is he going to tie together this conversation with a right winger and the Cubs?
Somehow
Ricketts. No, it actually wasn't him. Somehow we get on the subject of China. And I said, well, you know, here's something that, I don't know if you listened to Dan Janitis last Thursday when he was on, talking about this company that is a shipping company. I'll think of the name of it in a second. One of the top two or three container shippers back and forth to China. And Dan was saying that the stuff coming this way, they're loaded. It's just like it ever was. And the stuff going the other way, they actually have to have a ship every now and then run containers empty because we're not sending anything to them, but we're still buying the same amount of stuff from China. Maybe not quite the same amount, but pretty close.
They need the empty containers.
Yeah, they need the empty containers. So I was mentioning, I said, here's a story why, you know, why the, no matter who you are as president, and Trump, I'll admit, tried to do something about it, and whether he was just stumbled all over his feet or whatever he did, but, I mean, he didn't really do a very good job, but the fact is he tried, I think. I said, here's a situation where the American people don't give a rat's ass. They just want cheap stuff, and they really don't care where it came from, and if slave labor is used, they'd just rather not hear it. I mean, that's the decision that the U.S. population, in general, not you or me or Maddie, in general, has made. And I don't care who you are as president, you're not going to stop that. And she was livid. The reason why people don't take it upon themselves to not buy Chinese stuff is because They only read the regular press and don't read the good stuff, meaning Breitbart and Epoch Times and Fox. And I'm going, wait a minute. They've got no agenda. What are you talking about? But she was absolutely convinced that the reason why people...
You read the label. That's what you do.
I understand. But I'm saying, when I was growing up, if you walked in, or tried to give it to him anyway, I suppose if you snuck it, you could wear it, but if you tried to get my grandfather to wear something that didn't say Union Made on it, it was not going to happen. He didn't care if it was three times expensive. He was not going to wear anything that didn't say Union Made on it. Now, I don't think anything even says Union Made on it anymore, but he was willing to pay the difference. And I'm going to say now that this is something that people, maybe it's, you know, the kind of the recession we've been in for a while, whatever it is, nobody wants to hear it. And I said, you know, I'll prove my point to you. You know, which you never could do to somebody's arguing with you. I'll prove my point to you. What about all the colleges that have Nike as their sponsor? I said, do you think they don't know what's going on in China? Well, they probably don't. You're saying that every university, all the people at the university do nothing but read the press you don't like and don't read Breitbart and that's why they're misinformed. I mean, give me a break. So, of course, I turned a Cub game on last night, and then I don't know why Pat Hughes was on TV, Manny, but the other guy wasn't.
They were promoting that Pat Hughes' first TV game, just as like a fun thing to do.
I don't know why anybody watches the Cubs.
Well, that's
go ahead.
So then he starts talking about how beautiful the new Sloan Field is, and how it's a Nike training facility or Nike weight. What did Nike? Nike must have put a bunch of money out there. So all they did was talk about Nike the whole first four innings. I'm thinking, the Cubs don't know that all this stuff is from China shall we say, questionable labor and those kinds of things. I mean, the morals here. So if Hitler would have survived, we'd all be buying stuff from Germany because it was $2 cheaper or what? I mean, I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I mean, you would think that I have totally stopped buying anything I can from there. I'm sure something slips by me once in a while, but. I mean, why is it? I mean, there's no president that's going to change this if people want to do it. I'm just saying. So that was my.
Everybody wants a $500 4K TV.
Well, I don't know about the TVs, but it's your basic blue jeans, your socks for the kids, the sweatshirts. I mean, I'm starting to see more and more made different places, but I mean, a lot of what you see in government, I honestly believe this, Frank, a lot of what you see in government is just. It's just the natural progression of the way people think. People don't care about their own budgets, so why should the government care about theirs? Right? I mean, I'm not saying.
When's the last time the government really cared about the budget? In other words, rather than just talking about it.
Well, I think
they about it.
They care if people care, and it's obvious that people don't care. I mean, if you ran on a platform that you were going to straighten out the budget. I mean, who are the two most non-listened to, unpopular guys that did incredible work in the last 30 years? And don't say any name for other than Simpson Bowles.
And I was going to say Fauci.
Well, that
age and the pandemic. I know you disagree with me, but
I Fauci's just I don't know what happened to him, but Simpson Bowles. They said. No, he said everybody's foot. He goes, if you didn't find in there something to be pissed off about in their budget reform package, he goes, you either didn't read it well enough or we somehow forgot you. Because their whole point was, it's totally endemic, like the COVID. He goes, it's totally endemic. The people are getting something they're not paying for, and they love it. And the fact is that when it totals up at the end of the year, if they're paying this last year, the government paid twice as much as they took in. That's including, I think you should take the payroll taxes out of there, which means it'd be more like 3 to 4 times what they took in. But you're leaving them in there, and it's going to be worse this year. So, nobody's bitching about it, Frank. I mean,
here's something you brought up: the airlines. Airlines have gotten $79 billion in the past year.
There are people.
American Airlines is giving bonuses, and they figured out how to lay off people and not contribute to their unemployment benefits.
One of our listeners wrote in that he's convinced, or he knows somebody who's a pilot, and the guy's like a senior pilot. He's made $400,000, and he never even didn't fly last year. I mean, I get the part about, you know, the increased unemployment and all those other kinds of things, but why would you deserve your whole salary if you're not even there? I mean, working from home is one thing, but we're talking about exorbitant money. Now, if you're,
and you paid for that, Tom.
Yeah, well, that's
you
right.
You and I and Maddie paid for that.
Well, the point right now, Frank, is nobody's paying for it. For a while, and then everybody's going to get this bill.
Then we'll just declare bankruptcy and start over.
Which brings me, we have quite a few minutes left with you, which is good. I'm going to talk about A, the market, well, B, the market, but the dawn on me is, as I'm starting to read more and more, some of the listeners are sending me, because it seems like it's very piecemeal coming out what's in this bill. But I'm getting it by dribs and drabs. It strikes me that the strategy here, of course, nobody will ever put it out there as such. But then again, sometimes, as Jack Allen used to say on the board, he goes, we don't know where we're going, but we're almost there. I think the whole purpose of this thing, Frank, is you look at how much money San Francisco got and some of these other places. Rumor has it that San Francisco's entire deficit got wiped out with like a $650 million check or something. And I mean, that's what they're doing. And it dawned on me that the plan must be to just bail everybody out on the government side, because only 10% of the money maybe is going to individuals. They're bailing everybody out in all these states and municipalities with the idea that the only person left with massive amounts of debt is the federal government. And I'm just wondering your opinion. If that's what's happening, clearly the trade-off is we'll just put all the debt in one spot, we'll print the money, and hopefully we'll come out of this in a couple of years. And we've deflated things, and we've deflated the dollar and all these other kinds of things, and we'll just suck it up and hope it works, rather than having five states in receivership and 50 cities in bankruptcy. I'm convinced
that we decided that 12% inflation and 20% interest rate is what we want to do.
Well, I'm saying, but the flip side is, you don't have to deal with all the individual stuff. I mean, I got to believe Illinois is still going to probably go down, but most of the other states. I mean, if San Francisco goes down after you wiped out their whole test, you should put people in stocks, for God's sake. But I think that's what they're doing, Frank. And I think that is the plan, even though probably not one of them could articulate it. It just kind of lurched in that direction. What do you think of that? I mean, it has some sense to it. What do you think of it in general? If what I'm saying is true, I think it is.
Well, you have one big problem, much easier to deal with than lots of little problems. I mean, that's how we traded.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's how we manage risk. Reduce it to the lowest common denominator. In this case, it would be federal debt.
Well,
and we don't have to worry about the rest.
We sure aren't worried about moral hazard when it comes to helping out fellow pals, but God help you if you give something to the guy in the street. I mean, we are giving a little bit. We're throwing a bone to the guy in the street.
Oh, really? And that's the biggest complaint among many people.
Yeah, is a guy getting it when they don't think he deserves it.
Wait a minute. He has a free phone?
Yeah. But nobody cares about the...
Those guys and you who have the old candy bars and flip phones.
Yeah. Actually, I would love to have my flip phone back. I think I might do it.
I thought the Nokia candy bar was better than the Motorola flip phone. They're both great products. So.
Oh, God. But, you know, this is a strategy that you wonder where, if somebody actually sat down somewhere and pieced it together, whether they just flew around and gave money to everybody, and all of a sudden at the end of the day, the strategy just showed itself on the wall without anybody even thinking that was a strategy. I mean, you think anybody from the top articulated this thing all the way down?
It's the old case of not saying something out loud. You know, but you don't say it out loud.
But this was happening.
You choose your battles.
But this was happening when Trump was in there, and now it's happening with Biden in there. I mean, it's been ongoing.
Well, it's hard to tell what's happening with Biden in there. He's been president less than 2 months.
But I'm saying, that's the one thing Carl has, well, many things, but Carl has taught me, if you look at the numbers over the past 25, 30 years, you can't even tell when somebody leaves the presidency. It's all the same game. Maybe a few other. Maybe it might change hands who's getting the money, but the amount of money flying out versus flying in is the same.
Well, that's what the WHO said. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yep. Remember that one, Manny?
The Won't WHO. Get fooled again.
That's right.
That we continue to be fooled.
Well, you know, and they have now. They have people that are telling them that it's okay. And like I said, I haven't never mentioned it in a while, but even before the new monetarists, the story was that if somebody's home, you know, the Maddie and Jill couple, which I'm sure are fiscally very sound because Jill is, not because Maddie is necessarily, but the idea is if you spend your dough, if the increase in debt is less than your increase in your growth. If you're growing at 3% a year and your debt's only going up 2.99, you're fine. Just extend it out 25 centuries and you're good to go. Don't ever even try and think you're going to pay the stuff off from 40 years ago. You're not. Don't even attempt to. It's all about if we can get our growth back to 3% and our budget deficit starts to go down to 2.9 of the economy, we're fine. The only fly in that ointment, Frank, is when you do it during a period when your rates are 1% and they go to 5, now you got a problem. Like a real big problem. And I wonder just how much thought they put into that, if any. Or do they think
a lot of people are a lot of credit there.
Well, but they're really not increasing the debt that much because the Fed is just printing the money and buying the bonds back. When the Fed owns, large percentages of some CUSIP numbers of federal debt, right?
How much does China owe?
To us?
No, own. Government debt.
Of ours?
Mm-hmm.
Way less than they used to. Way less. They've come way down. I actually just looked at that not that long ago. Exterior countries used to be over 50%. I think they're less than, one of the biggest ones that's dropped is China. You can't really tell how much the Saudis, because remember, they got that secret deal where it's not published how much they own, I don't think. Actually,
all the information's starting to become secret.
Yeah, hey, Matty, that's actually an easy Google. Google that, the largest foreign owners of U.S. government debt. You know what's up there pretty high is Ireland, of all places. We just did this a few weeks ago, Manny, I think. it's interesting. I think Japan is number one. China might be a close second, but it's there. But the Saudi's there someplace. But I think don't they get to buy at the Fed auction and not get named or something? Wasn't that the deal for the way back in the oil deal, where after we agreed to let
China owns 1.07 trillion of U.S. debt, which is more than a third of foreign holdings.
And who's right after them in Japan?
Well, I'm trying to find a list here.
Yeah, I knew they were there, but I think they're down some on theirs. But yeah, it makes it.
Yeah. So let's see here. So China is 1.07 trillion. Looks like Japan owns a ton too. Japan owns 1.26 trillion, which is even more than China.
Yeah, they're higher than China now, I thought.
And then you have the UK is 445 billion, Ireland's 350, Hong Kong is 266, Luxembourg is 267, they own a lot. Brazil 264, Switzerland 247. It's mostly Japan and China.
Now I'm going to say that the stuff coming from Luxembourg are US companies.
Very possible, yeah. $267 billion from Luxembourg.
And probably Ireland also.
Yeah, Ireland, $330 billion.
Part of the idea when this is the sneaky stuff, that our listeners send me, Frank, is I believe that maybe, remember when the companies were offshoring all their stuff and not paying taxes? Well, they still
Apple in Ireland.
Yeah, they still probably are. But not to the same extent after the last tax thing that Trump's guys put through. Not saying it's bad. I'm saying it happened during the Trump administration. I think the only way you could get your money back into the country was by buying a U.S. Treasury. Then they looked the other way. So if Apple or somebody had, $400 million of unpaid taxes sitting in a Luxembourg bank. I think that could be repatriated only in U.S. treasuries, because the U.S. treasury was broke. They let people repatriate it in treasuries, and that they look the other way on the taxes. So I'm going to take a guess that some of that money coming out of Luxembourg and Ireland is that kind of money.
Well, a lot of the banking historically has been done in the Benelux area, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg. And I can't imagine that change.
You guys have been to Europe. You ever been to Luxembourg? I mean, can you,
yeah.
Do you even know when you're in there? How big is it? Is it like Evergreen Park or what?
No, it's a little nicer than Evergreen Park. Not much more.
Is it that tiny?
Yeah, I think it was, when I was there, it was around 1 million people. And that was a long time ago.
Because I have read that you're better off in a bank there than you are in Switzerland. I don't know if the privacy laws, if we've beat up on them as much as we have the Swiss banks.
Well, the Swiss hate everybody.
Well, that makes them...
That's a problem.
The Luxembourg population is claiming to be about 614,000 right now.
How big is the place?
300,000 disappeared.
Does it say how many miles is it long and short, length and width? Any idea? Can't be very big.
How many square miles?
Yeah.
Luxembourg square miles is 998.
998? Yep. Not 1,000, just 998?
998 square miles.
So what is that?
That'd be 20 by 50.
Yeah. Wow.
Smaller in Cook County.
Yeah. It is.
They're about the same size.
It's probably all banks. If you can't get a job at a bank there, there must be something really wrong with you. Anyway, Frank, we'll talk to you later.
About any bank.
S&P futures now only up 575. NASDAQ futures up 22. Frank, we'll talk to you on Thursday. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, North Bank, Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures not only up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 15. Hey, I think Bitcoin got close to 60, and now it's 56, so it's really come back off that high. I don't know what that means, but...
That's a new high, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. Well, 60 would be a really new high, wouldn't it? Because it was 56.5 or something last time. Anyway, Dow Futures up 107. Like I said, individual stocks. Boeing's up $6. That's what's taking the Dow up here. Goldman Sachs up $1. Nothing else really is coming out at anybody here, at least on the big stock page. Well, big stocks. Some of the other stocks now are just as big, the ones nobody, well, not a whole lot of people have heard of, but they're up there. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 49.1%, so pretty flat. Shanghai down 33, that's 0.9%. They were up a bunch on Friday. Hang Seng up 94.3%, so mixed to kind of not much over there comparing to how much they've been flying all over the place. DAX up 27.2%, FTSE up 26.4%, CAC around up 23.4%. This is a way of review on Friday. Dow's up 293.9%. I think that's a new record. S&P's up 4. The NASDAQ was down 78. It's kind of a familiar tune. The NASDAQ's been down. S&P and Dow have been up. Dow up a lot. S&P a little bit. NASDAQ down. So that's the tune we've been playing. Bonds 1.62, kind of unchanged, but still. So man, I had my 1.5 by Memorial Day. I was a little light on that prediction, wasn't I?
Yep.
Just saying. How about 2% by Labor Day? Is that going to make it now be 2% by the 4th of July or what? The Bund, minus 0.30. Japan, positive 0.10. UK, positive 0.83. Oil, very, very slow this morning. Down a penny, 65.60. Brent, down 4 cents, 69.18. Natural gas, down 6 cents. Back down to 253. So, Manny, why the hell didn't we buy this at 220? Right at the 320, sell twice as much, and I'll buy it all back at 253. Light the cigars. We'd be like, who was it, Billy Ray, and who was the other guy? Trading Places out on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
our Bob unchanged at 214. And what else we got? We got gold up 979, 1729. Now, that's up 9, but it's right back to where it was Friday at 1730, so it went down during the day. Silver up 26 cents, 26.18. Copper, 414. And we've got crypto again. Bitcoin's down 36.58. I don't remember trading 60,000 on Friday though, man. It must trade all weekend, I'm thinking. But every one of these things is down. Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash. I've asked you this before. What the hell is the difference between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash? Do you have any idea?
I think they're just different coins.
Okay, they're not even with the same name. They're different. All right, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports? A lot of sports.
Yeah, 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Edens and Kennedy are all quiet. Same for the Eisenhower. Stevenson, traffic starts to build as you approach downtown due to some extra exit ramp restrictions, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Southside Expressway is looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, there's a crash at Grand Avenue and Armitage. And then just north of there, there's some police activity that has Cicero closed between Grace and Berteau. The Six Corners intersection is closed due to a police investigation. No details on what happened there, but
the police.
Yeah, but that has that busy Six Corner intersection closed. Everything else is okay out there. Weather today, much colder this week than it has been the last couple of weeks. And we'll have some rain, sleet, and snow mix this afternoon. Could get an inch or so of accumulation. We'll reach a high of 37. And we'll kind of be right around that mid-30s range, just above freezing all day today. So we'll see if we get any accumulation this afternoon when that storm comes in. Right now, it is mostly clear and 34 degrees downtown, going up to a wet high of 37. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 74. Right now, it's clear and 51. In sports, the Bulls got their first win since the All-Star break, blowing out the Raptors last night, 118-95. Blackhawks were off. They're at the Panthers tonight to take on Joel Quenneville and Florida. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time puck drop.
Are they 0-4 against those guys or something?
I think so, yeah. Coyotes lost to the Wild 4-1. Busy day in college hoops. The Fighting Illini won the Big Ten Tournament Championship for the first time since 2005, which was the last time they were in the Final Four. They held on to beat Ohio State 91-88 in overtime. So they are the Big Ten tournament champions, and that earned them a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, as of course yesterday was Selection Sunday. The Illini will take on Drexel, the 16 seed. Other teams of note, Loyola earned a spot into the tournament as the Missouri Valley Conference champions. They're a number 8 seed, and they'll take on number 9 Georgia Tech. But the interesting thing about that is if Loyola wins and Illinois wins, they'll face off in the second round of the NCAA tournament. A fun little nugget there thrown in by the tournament selection.
Did you agree with this? Who are the other number ones?
The other number ones were Gonzaga, who was the number one overall seed in the tournament, and then Baylor and Michigan were the other number ones.
Baylor got their butt kicked yesterday, didn't they?
I don't know if they played yesterday, but they did lose in the Big 12 tournament. Yeah, they're not quite the same team since they had a COVID pause right in the middle of the season. They were really good and undefeated. Now I think they've lost 3 or 4 games since they came back. Other teams of note, the Big Ten got 9 teams in, breaking a previous record.
Yeah, but they're not really the Big Ten, they're the Big, like, 25.
Yeah, they've got 14 in the league, so 9 out of 14 is still a lot, but not as much as 9 out of 10.
What seed did the Irish get?
Yeah, Irish sitting at home this year. But
they're not even an NIT, are they?
No, they're below 500. Iowa, you have to be at least above 500 to get an NIT invitation.
The NIT out, or does that come out today?
I think it comes out today. Iowa and Ohio State earned number 2 seeds. Purdue, a number 4 seed. Wisconsin, a number 9. Maryland, a number 10. Rutgers, a number 10. And Michigan State got hot at the end of the year, snuck into the tournament as a number 11, but they have a play-in game. They're one of the first 4. So they will play UCLA on Thursday night to get into the regular field.
So the play-in games are not for the 16 seed anymore, they're for the 11 seed.
Well, they're both. So they're let me pull up the schedule here. So you have 2 16s that are part of the play-in, or sorry, 4 16s that are part of the play-in, and then 4 11s that are part of the play-in. So you'll have 2 11s come out of this to join the real field, and 2 16s come out of this to join the
real field.
Well,
that makes sense, because some teams that don't make it are clearly one of the best 64 teams in the country.
Right.
Did Drake make it?
Drake made it as one of the play-ins. Yep, so number 11 Drake will play number 11 Wichita State on Thursday night.
Wichita State's pretty good, aren't they?
Both those teams are really good. Yeah, so they both got in, but they had to play in to make the 64. UCLA and Michigan State are the other 11s.
Why did we go from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to Friday to Monday?
Supposedly, it's COVID-related. I don't know the logic. I don't know if they wanted to give them an extra day to quarantine or what it is, but yeah, they announced that a couple months ago when they announced the Indiana schedule. And, yeah, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the first weekend. And then the Sweet 16 weekend is different, too. I'll have to pull up what that's
about. I think it has a lot to do with there's nothing on TV sports-wise Monday and Tuesday nights.
That could be, but it's been Thursday through Sunday forever.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Would there have been that much? Well, the final's always been on a Monday, right?
Final's always on a Monday, yep. Final 4 on Saturday, and then the championship on Monday.
I don't know. They're probably just trying it out, but I mean, I can't imagine what difference it made COVID-wise which day it was.
Well, I mean, I tend to agree with you, but they gave them one extra day, so I don't know if it was a quarantine thing or what, coming into Indiana from wherever you're coming from, and then you have an extra day to isolate. I think that's the thought behind
it. Is the NIT bubbling someplace?
I don't know anything about the NIT, but that would make sense.
Well, it used to be all in New York, and then they spread that out just for the finals in New York, right?
Yep, just the Final 4 is at the Garden, and then everything else is spread out actually at home arenas. So there's no, like, tournament spot. You just play whoever is the higher seed.
I need to go to a game someday at the new Garden.
I would love to as well.
John, how are you, bud?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I was worried about you. I didn't know if you were going to get all your clocks together.
All my timers with different protocols for how to change the time and the settings and that. I just kind of gave up on a couple of them.
Kevin and I had a long conversation about you last night. We were we were talking actually this week, Manny, we might try and get even if it's briefly. I've been getting a lot of stuff. I don't know if you've read it, but John, you've probably been getting it too. Kevin and Carl are kind of all over this Microsoft thing, and I don't need to be any part of that conversation because those two guys know 100 times more than me. So if we do a 15-minute segment this week, I think that would be very informative for everybody, Maddie. And I might just listen, you know, which is hard for me, you know. But that, because evidently it's a lot bigger and it's affecting more people, and all of a sudden, you know, because it's 5 or 6 days old, it's out of the news already, right? What do you think, Manny? What do you think the news cycle is now, about 24 hours or what, for people just go on to the next thing?
Yeah, that's about it. No matter how big the story.
It's, and yet some stories just seem to hang. Like, well, I guess if you keep, you think, the stuff with Cuomo would have, if a new lady doesn't come out every third day to keep it going, do you think that would have just died too or no?
I don't know, yeah.
That thing has me kind of confused because he was the darling of so many powerful people for a while, and now he's, you know, they can't seem to get rid of him fast enough, so something turned, you know, in his inner circle or outer circle, and he's now just become anathema to the Democrats. But I think, you know, the COVID record is worse than what's going on, you know, the front with his closest female aides, bad as that is. But I do think that the COVID stuff is kind of getting brushed aside, and that really is where his whole style as a governor is called into question. So I don't know really what's going on there.
It is
more to it though than what we see.
It is definitely flying all over the place. I mean, I don't know. Whenever people start accusing people, whenever this court of public opinion happens, and I'm not saying that these guys or women or people aren't necessarily guilty. I mean, because, you know, I mean, it's not like I don't believe the ladies or anything like that, but a shot from 8 or 10 years ago, but some of the stuff is pretty current. I mean, you know, so it's not just that. I just, you know, I'm sure in the Catholic Church, you know, some people got molested. But if the priest died 25 years ago and you lob one up there, you're like, where are you going with this one? I mean, for God's sake, it happened in 1958. One guy's been dead for 30 years and you can't even defend himself. I mean, I don't know. It seems like,
The statute of limitations has been carved out for, you know, lawsuits against the Catholic Church. Just that one and only defendant, which always strikes me as curious when you got to bend the law one way.
Oh, yeah.
Only to get some result you want, so.
I mean, so much stuff happened in people's lives back and forth, and parties and receptions and trips and so forth. And that kind of history, you just wonder, if somebody grabs, you know, some part of your body, male or female, 15 years ago, and you don't say anything, is there a statute of limitation? Is your butt healed by now? I mean, you know. But I mean, I guess if somebody just does it all the time and that's the kind of person they are, then yeah, it's a problem. I mean, there's no, I don't know, it's hard for me to do that.
Well, the whole thing with Harvey Weinstein and that,
well, that's
culture, which was, you know, notorious. Anybody who had anything to do with him or his studio knew this, but all of a sudden it became no longer proper for that to happen. And then the floodgates opened and everybody piled on. And I'm always interested in the timing of these things. Something else has made him vulnerable. Same thing with Cuomo too, and stuff that it's not new for him, I'm sure, but all of a sudden it's no longer something that's being tolerated, and it has been tolerated, you know, by people who could have done something about it a lot.
Well, when it's tolerated,
something about the timing that always makes me wonder who decided now is the time that we no longer have any patience for this. So,
I just, well, with Weinstein, there's. How can I be? This is a moral issue. It's also an economic issue. It's, you know, he's giving away other people's money basically to have sex, right?
Right.
I mean, there have been times, you know, I mean, I happen to know a couple of my stepfather's buddies who own their own businesses, and they're all dead. So talk about the statute of limitations. But they had, I use the term assistant secretaries or whatever. And, you know, the going rate was 15 grand, and these people made 50. And they took, you know, when a guy went out on the road, they went with as the assistant, and other things went on. Okay? But they were paid. I'm saying that was their arrangement between two adults, and it was their money. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying I would ever do that. I wouldn't. But the point is, they both were fine with it. Right? I mean, Harvey Weinstein was giving out jobs to people for $1 million, $500,000 for a movie when the person's next spot, male or female, was 30 grand. It wasn't a competitive situation. It's almost the exact same thing, although it's, it's different because it's you know, it's sexual, but it's almost the same thing about paying four times as much for an expressway repair and then knowing that you paid somebody too much and you have them do favors for you for the next 5 years, right? Economically, it's the same thing.
Just about as sexy a comparison, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the guy was a cad when you use your company's money to get you sex. Right? I mean, that's surely no good. I mean, anyway, because you're stealing on top of it, right? On top of everything else. Plus, the guy was gross, which made it even worse, but that's another. Anyway, John, let's leave that topic because we're going to get ourselves in trouble.
Yeah.
What do you make of the reason why I went down that road when I shouldn't have, because really nobody should. I did it sort of on purpose because I wanted to talk a little bit about what Dan Janitis was talking about last Thursday, where how the container ships coming from China are as full as they ever have been, and the only ones that are hurting are the ones going back. We're not exporting near as much. We're importing damn near as much. And then when you come to morality of this, over there, you're talking about companies that everybody knows is part of, you know, indentured servitude, shall we say, not paying people a wage and making sure that, you know, they can't revolt, that kind of thing. Pretty much everybody knows that. So we care a whole lot about a person here who had to have sex with Harvey Weinstein for an $800,000 part, and we don't care at all about somebody who guy was, you know, put on a train and the wife was given a new husband and the guy's working in some slave labor camp. Why? Because it's distant or because you can buy your blue jeans $10 cheaper? Where's the morals? I mean, how is it that last night I watched a Cub game and all I heard about was the Nike Center? I mean, why does anybody? I mean, our morals are becoming very convenient right now. Some we look at, some we don't, and I can't do that. Mine are the same across the board. I just, you know, that's the way I was taught, I guess. I care a lot about the person who had to have sex with Harvey Weinstein, but I also care about the wife who just lost her husband over in China because they're going to indoctrinate the guy. I mean, why is it if we save a buck, we don't care, or what?
Well, when Joe Biden was asked about the slave labor camps in China some time ago, his response was, which I think expresses very accurately how most people in politics think about it, that's just China's cultural norms. They are used to doing this, and it's going to be very hard to change that. Which, is startling, and it's honesty in some ways, but it also shows the kind of ho-hum attitude towards it. And I think, deep down, there's a lot of, industrialists and globalists who see that as a model to be spread everywhere else, too. So it isn't particularly repugnant to people you would think it would be. It's repugnant to you and me, and I think to a lot of people listening to the show, but there's a lot of people who see that as, the wave of the future, and the sooner we get there, the better for people in control. So there isn't the outrage you would expect there to be, because a lot of people with money and power don't find it outrageous. It's desirable.
I know you're not a big fan of Joe's, and I can't say that I am either, but I'm going to say that Joe is smart enough to know that the issue is bigger than him. If he shut them down totally and there were shortages here and all of a sudden the price of blue jeans went to $125 and $50, American people don't want, they want to be blind at it. They want to do business with Hitler in 1934. They don't care. If it's cheaper, if I can get a Mercedes out of Germany in 1935, I want it. Especially if it's cheaper, which they weren't, but that's the attitude of people here, out of sight, out of mind. I think. I mean, I'm blaming. You've known me forever, and Maddie has too. I'm not one of these guys where somebody shoots somebody and they say it's not the shooter's fault. It's society. I'm going to say the reason why the politicians have the policy they do towards China is that's just what people want. They want to turn a blind eye to somebody being forced labor. They want the pollution over there and not here, and they want the blue jeans $10 cheaper. That's
well,
the collective feeling.
Politicians have benefited from strengthening China's hand here too. They didn't have any outrage when American factories were encouraged to move overseas and jobs were lost here, and there was no way to buy cheap blue jeans made here. anymore, and so people gladly paid, you know, for the blue jeans that they could get. They didn't want to pay twice that just because they were made in the U.S. There's some people who would do that, you know, look and look until they find a domestic-made product, and they'd pay whatever, you know, to get it. But that's a very small slice of the population, and the politicians have kind of helped make that the standard, too. They benefited from it, as well as the Chinese, so... there's no interest now in reversing that I can see. I mean, Trump pushed back on it, but he didn't have the Republican Party really behind him on that. At least
it's the same reason
old guard of the Republican Party.
It's the same reason why Roosevelt didn't declare war on Germany in 1939. He didn't have the public support. Right.
Right, and you know, American corporate interests would never have gone for that either, because they were benefiting from the free exchange of information and products too. So there was no incentive then. Roosevelt would have been vilified had he, you know, pushed earlier for war.
Oh, sure.
So,
well, that's what I'm saying.
And maybe, you know, looking back, it isn't as, you know, it became necessary in some ways for Roosevelt to wait just to kind of make sure that the public was behind it, because there's nothing worse than fighting a war that the people aren't behind, as we've in Vietnam.
We've certainly seen that. Well, I mean, I just. It's a situation where it's a tough one to start with. I mean, point is, way back in the day when Dr. Jay and I were on the score, we'd have this discussion, and I'd say, Jan, it is so uneven. I mean, Bill Gates, before he became so full of himself, it's scary, but Bill Gates he'd walk into the Oval Office and he'd say, hey, by the way, you know, we sold 90 million hardware pieces over there, or somebody did. And they've bought, you know, four copies of Microsoft, and they've reprinted it 90 bazillion times. Or, you know, the Beatles walk in and say, how is it we sold one Beatles album over there, and every Chinese person's got everything they want in the Beatles, right? I mean, they did everything to copyright laws, apparently, but it's so uneven. And then if you're President Flanagan, you go, man, I got to do something about these guys. And all of a sudden, Matty Weber rushes in, and he's the head of Pepsi, and he... which I think owned Kentucky Fried at the time, or somebody who owns, I thought they did, if not somebody did. And, well, wait a minute. there's more pictures of the colonel over there than Mao. And oh, by the way, a billion people are drinking a Pepsi a day. What are you doing? You know, I mean, it was so uneven that I think Bush, Clinton, all these guys just said the hell with it. Just let it happen. Right? I don't think they had any intention. They did that with healthcare for 30 years, for God's sake. Or 25,
right? And getting, you know, China and the WTO too—it was all just a way of letting them do what they wanted. We're too big to fight them. We're not going to win that battle this way. So let's just, you know, look the other way about all this stuff. And of course, you know, you can see exactly what we've reaped in the process. But nobody had any, you know, political will going back really, you know, to Nixon to do anything about this. It was all just get in there fast, make as much money as you can. It's an untapped market. Let's you know, do its bidding and make what it wants, and, you know, we'll buy what we have to, and we'll make sure that we have to buy a lot from them in the process. So it's all worked out very nicely for a certain strata of you know, the corporate global.
Well, and it's worked out very nicely for
the Chinese population. It's not helping us either. So,
well, it's seriously helped a slice of the Chinese population. All the sons and daughters of the people who run in the party that are the sticky fingers in the pie. They're like the mob, where if you want a factory, you got to grease those people. I mean, China, a few years ago, was making more millionaires per day than any country in the world. And they're making it from payoffs, right?
Right, but the average Chinese person is, you know, is as benighted a state now as they were under, you know, Mao in his cruelest days. Really, they have much less freedom, I think, now than they ever did.
And they were getting all the rice they can eat, I mean, for making stuff for the rest of the world. And, oh, by the way, all our pollution's over there. Like, the pollution doesn't come this way. You know, come on. But we do the same thing in Mexico. We offed our pollution, and so you pour it in one side of the Rio Grande and not the other side. And that helps how? I don't... But, I mean, these are things... What I'm trying to get to here is it's political. The political will... I mean, it's hard to find really a leader, John. It's everybody, you know, they stick. Who's the, what was the, I don't think we have this one on the machine, Manny. What did Claude Rains say? I'm just a corrupt public official. I put my finger up and whichever way the wind blows, I blow, and now the wind is blowing from Vichy. I mean, this is not a battle any president here is going to fight. I'm going to make sure that every shot glass is made here.
20,000 francs says it isn't.
Is that a serious offer?
I just paid out 20. I'd like to get it back.
Make it 10. I'm only a poor, corrupt official.
See? 10's still pretty good.
Claude Rains.
Is Manny the best or what?
Good job, man.
But, these are battles that are really tough to fight. And we put somebody in that job, no matter who he is. I mean, there's questions about, how much Biden's going to be able to handle mentally anyway. But let's say he's 100%. Every single person that walks into your office probably has some kind of a good idea or something that's wrong and that's going on. How many can you even deal with? Have you ever read any?
Well, look at the leadership class in both parties, where they're working for the Chinese pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody like Eric Swalwell, who's on the Intelligence Committee after this spy scandal, is pretty well documented. Nobody in Congress seems particularly bothered by that, and I think Trump and a lot of other people were bothered by it, but it didn't go very far. And that just shows that, what president is going to come in and defy, his party leadership. It doesn't matter what party he's a member of, because the party is completely controlled by these interests, too. They have no interest in bucking it. Nobody in Congress has any interest in defying the Chinese or taking a tough stand on, a trade imbalance. What's in it for them? They're already bought and sold by the Chinese in most cases anyway, so they're not going to, bite the hand that feeds them. It isn't any president that's going to be able to do that or last very long. And I think that's kind of maybe the Trump model, that he didn't buy that. And, of course, he's pretty much ostracized in a lot of Republican quarters for taking the position he did on China. And everybody wants it to get back to the way it used to be under Biden, and it's going there like, to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I mean, when you start ticking off, say there's five or six big issues that we have to deal with in this country, and you start peeling them off as, I can't do that one, I can't do that one, I can't do that one. Like, what's left? I mean, this stuff is getting, I mean, clearly the situation with China and the offloading of labor and pollution and any kind of labor laws and everything like that, it's not only a U.S. problem, it's a worldwide problem. When we saw it happen with the COVID, did the Chinese buy off the World Health Organization or what? I don't know the full details, and we never will know, but somehow or another, there was a slow reaction to this COVID thing. Somehow or another. Whether it would have made any difference or not, I don't know. And whether if we had, Solomon sitting in the White House or somebody, every single president, no matter who they are, Republican or Democrat, seems to be at some point totally let down by their bureaucracy. And when you go back on it, and you look at the morality of the situation, the people in China, they didn't seem to care if this was happening and all, and people in the plants were getting sick. Clearly, the people here, I just got a thing from one of the listeners, and he was ranting and raving about these bleep people in Italy surely should have realized that the planes full of people going back and forth between Milan and the Wuhan province, because evidently it's a lot of the fabric trade is over there, the rag trade, as they say in New York, and that's in Milan's the fashion center, right? So people are flying back and forth, and how outrageous it is for those people to have done that, knowing the dangers, or should have known. So I wrote back to this guy, and I go, what about the 200,000 people here that flew back and forth to China, the executives that should have known, and still put their people on the plane to Wuhan and other places? And I get the email back, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. But, Jack, what do you do with all this stuff? Can you put all these people in jail? Can you kill them all? You don't want to kill them all. We don't do that here. Is there no sanctions for these people ever? There's no sanction for Lori taking $281 million from the COVID thing and sticking it in the police fund. And yet, now this new law is passed and they're saying you can't lower taxes and the money has to be used for what it's supposed to be used for. Okay, now there's no enforcement of that. There's no anything. And what are we doing here? And yet, you know, for red light cameras and parking tickets, they'll follow you in the can to get the money from you. It seems like we enforce stuff against the schlugs like us. The other people, there's no enforcement of this stuff. Once in a while, you wing some guy, you know, you go get some real big guy and you do something to him, and people think that, oh yeah, they're going after the other guys too. But I don't know how long we can last like this with this two and three and four standards. Do you? I mean, it's a moral situation, but it's also how do you live like that? How's that for a question?
You know, it seems to me that we're kind of, you know, we were dancing to the Chinese tune for a long time when it came to our balanced trade, and now we're still dancing to their tune about, you know, staying in a lockdown, and of course not just us who's in the lockdown and ever more threatening, you know, lockdown is what we're always being presented with if we don't, you know, abide by whatever the rule of the day happens to be, and all this stuff, you know, about government money without the ability to raise, or lower taxes. To me, it's just a way of keeping productivity down at the lowest local level and making sure that people never really benefit from whatever, you know, the government gives them in such a way that their standard of living can increase or that they can get out from under a mountain of debt. So you got the Chinese not only, you know, pushing the disease, but now you got them retarding any recovery from it, and the powers that be in Washington seem perfectly willing to make our recovery as slow and painful and as ineffective as possible. So, plus we still are buying stuff like crazy from the Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
So none of this is going towards making ourselves, you know, independent. You look at Biden with the Keystone Pipeline thing, where our energy independence is just being thrown out the window. And all that does is make us more beholden to people who want to see us destroyed. So, I mean, you got to believe at some point that if it isn't one world government, it's a government that, you know, acts like one. And and there's a lot of people just willing to get on that bandwagon and not look back, which is pretty distressing.
Well, the Keystone Pipeline was, I don't necessarily agree with not building it, but whenever we talk about that one, Jan, we need to say that particular pipeline had nothing to do with American oil. It's Canadian oil. The story is that there's when you build a refinery, and I'm not that much of an engineer, but I know a little bit about this. When you build a refinery, you essentially build a refinery to deal with certain types of oil. Not all oil is the same. Matter of fact, there's somebody can take a tanker of oil, not me or you or Maddie, but somebody can stick a thing in there, put it under his magnifying glass, and he can tell you exactly where it came from. And oil is a signature just about like anything. Well, we had all this oil that was coming from Saudi, from Venezuela, and it's a very sandy, heavy mix. And we had refineries down in, you know, on the Gulf Coast somewhere to deal with that sort of oil. Now, we don't get near as much from those people because we got so much of our own that those refineries were not doing so hot. So everybody thinks that this Keystone has to do with the stuff coming out of the Bakken and those places. It's not. It's Canadian oil that was going to be shipped that is also real sandy and real cruddy. It's the tar sands oil. And it was going to go through a pipeline down in New Orleans to essentially fill up those refineries that were no longer full. It really, now granted, it gives us oil. It's a very efficient way of doing things. I mean, it's like they would say,
and it's big jobs. Jobs all the way through
sure,
the economy.
Sure. But it is Canadian oil through the U.S. to the southern coast where they have refineries for this. But some of it's common sense, John. I mean, we don't need that oil, but it's just like the North Slope oil. Was never supposed to be exported, right? Yet I believe that if you looked at where that oil went, a lot of it went to Japan. And you'd say, wait a minute, why is that not exported? Not exporting it against, quote, the law. Well, they've had a credit system. Now, if you pull oil out of the Persian Gulf, you really would rather bring it to the East Coast here, okay, which is a relatively short trip than Japan. And you really don't want the stuff from the North Slope to go through the Panama Canal or around South America and come to New Jersey to the refineries. So it makes a hell of a lot more sense to bring the stuff from Saudi Arabia to the East Coast and take the stuff from essentially Vancouver, wherever the port is over there. What is the name of the port where they had the spill? And ship that to Japan because it's not very far. So you credit one against the other. Now, is it exporting? Probably. But in reality, it's saving on transportation, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, it makes perfect sense. But if you have a law that says North Slope oil is never going to be exported, is it exported? Well, it's in Japan, right? Does that mean it's exported or not? I don't know. You guys are smarter than me. But it sure seems like it's not, because we don't have very many refineries on the West Coast, right? So I'm just saying we have some. So a lot of this is some sort of common sense. A lot of it is rules. A lot of it's all kinds of things. But the Keystone, the big thing there was it goes over the Ogallala Aquifer. Say that 10 times in a row. Which really causes the entire central part of the country to be arid, right? If not, you couldn't grow anything in Nebraska, the western Iowa. Manny, how much of Iowa gets their water from the aquifer? Just about the furthest, the western quarter of the state maybe or something?
Maybe, but I honestly have no idea.
But it's all in Nebraska, all of Oklahoma. And it centers in, guess where? Ogallala, Nebraska. And the thing is huge. It's like an inland sea. Well, the last thing you want, which I don't think you could ever have a problem, as big of a spill as you had, with that clunky old oil, last thing you want is oil getting into that thing. So, yeah, is there a fear? But I also know one of our guys who's been on the show, this John Lee, his company, they have a system, if you want to pay for it, John, they can put strain gauges, and matter of fact, I think they might have been retrofitting the Alaska pipeline. They can put strain gauges on these pipelines now at a realistic cost, probably like every 100 feet, where the second that there's any kind of a leak or a strain or something, you know about it. And if there is a leak, it's, you know, a relative puddle compared to what it used to have been. So it's not like we can't do this if we want to, right? I'm just saying. You know, so I don't have a real problem with...
And I'm with you on that. I just think when there's money to be made on oil, no matter where it comes from, and you decide, you know, we're going to do it in a less efficient and less geopolitically effective way, I think it's going back to a situation where we're at the, you know, kind of dance to other people's tune. And why don't we make... The calls about this stuff and not surrender that right to somebody else. We're making ourselves less able to compete, you know, by just shutting off this as a money maker and a pusher for the economy. And I mean, we got the possibility of making good jobs for people, and we decide that that's, you know, not as important as what? Giving other countries no need to buy from us anymore? That to me is just like tying your hands.
Well, nobody's going to build another refinery. And nobody wants one in their backyard. So the idea of being able to use a few that are there already. But, you know, the interesting, well, a lot of interesting parts is when people look at we do it every morning. And I am remiss once in a while. I mean, there should be a day where we get an oil guy. Everybody knows a guy. Do we know an oil guy, man? We should own an oil guy. Just to go through the differences in the grades of crude. Matter of fact, we had a guy call me. One day, I wanted to know if I could get rid of some. He wanted to hedge grade 5 oil, like bunker oil. And I was looking all over. There's got to be. I looked at all the oil futures contracts in the world. There's got to be 50 of them. Rotterdam light, Rotterdam heavy. I mean, they're all over the place. And when in the morning, we give West Texas and we give Brent. Okay, Brent is British North Sea, and West Texas is. Intermediate is really good oil coming from here, but there's all kinds of grades of this stuff, and there's all kinds of different prices depending on where you are. When the oil got down to, where did it get down to, man? Like $30 a barrel, 28 or something like that? The stuff in Canada, the spot price for the stuff we're talking about that was going to go through the Keystone, it's heavy, sandy, and I think it got down to like $5 a barrel or less. You couldn't give it away. And that was the reason why these guys want this pipeline. Because it doesn't do you any good up there without a refinery that can deal with it. That's why the stuff in, the field in Texas' name? That's not the Bakken, it's the other one. I'll think of it. But whatever that, they don't, they, I think they might be starting to get a pipeline, Jan, or one, a couple of them are starting to open, but they were like a $10 discount to spot. Because by the time you trucked it somewhere into a rail head and put it on the rail, you're talking, it was like a $10 a barrel hit just for transportation. So, I mean, a lot of what we talk about, even on the show, and clearly what other people talk about, we talk about on the show, is these prices are all over the place. I mean, it's like, take a farmer. I mean, oil, you know, corn's $4 a bushel. It's not $4 a bushel in your barn or your silo. You got to get it someplace to where it's $4 a bushel, right? I mean, this commodity area, we don't talk about it as much as we should, but we should probably talk a little bit more about that stuff, because it's pretty fascinating, especially from Illinois. I mean, it's the state economy, really. But it's all about barges. It's all about locks and dams. It's all about all that stuff. Nothing does you any good in your backyard, right, Jan? I mean, if you and I had an oil pump in our backyard, what exactly would we do with it? We can't put it in the Suburban. You got to get it to a refinery, get it from the refinery to a gas station. There's way more to this than meets the eye, right?
Well, and, you know, the rumors that I read, you know, in various places about supply chain issues today, and I'm not really, I mean, I'm not in the market right now for a refrigerator. I hope I don't have to be, you know, but it looks like they're hard to get. And, you know, part of it is the shipping container issue. Part of it, I think it goes beyond that, and I'm not sure that anybody is, if they're paying attention to it, they're certainly not saying very much about it. But that has real issues in the event of, you know, any sort of a constraining of demand in one area versus in another, or you in lockdown situations where things paralyze or freezes up and that you don't have any way of tracking this stuff or anybody who's really looking out for it. And I just think that, you know, when we're dealing with a globalist economy as we have been pushed towards, and we don't pay attention to, you know, the hazards of not paying attention to supply chain issues, and we don't care about them. And we saw this with, you know, see it all the time with pharmaceutical issues, you know, when we become beholden to cheap producers, and, you know, we don't worry about how we're going to get that stuff if we can't get it for any reason, and we can't produce it here quickly. Somebody is clearly not minding the store, and I guess they're getting paid not to mind the store. They're rewarded for not minding the store, it seems to me. So it looks to me like we've kind of ceded not just our producing ability, but our ability to move things. And I don't know what your take on that is, but the supply chain issues would seem to be controllable to some extent. We've got tons of ports, we've got tons of rail system and everything else, you know, miles and miles of this stuff, but it doesn't seem to really work very well in times like these. So,
well, years ago, Jen, we were, this is probably before, how long has the plant in Belvedere been open? Is that before Matty Weber? It's got to be 30, 35 years, right? The Chrysler plant there?
Before that, I mean, the Belvedere Plymouth, I mean, well, that was in the 50s. So, I mean, that plant was there,
They built the car that Chrysler came back in. Remember those crummy little things? What was the name of that car? It was a K car. Like they built, but every other place, even when I got my first job at Hi-Lo Foods of all places, you'd have a truck, okay, and there was a big, you know, there's the size of the food store, and then there was a big back office, back warehouse, not huge, but it was. So when the truck would come, you'd pull all the stuff off the truck because he wanted to be out of there in a nanosecond, and you stacked the stuff in the back, and as you needed it, you pulled it out into the store. Until people said, wait a minute, you're handling this crap twice. What's the matter with you? And even your car places, I mean, your manufacturing facilities, people get deliveries of seats, they get windows, they get, I mean, there's got to be 1,000, 1,500 parts, 2,000 parts that go in a car, and that would all be inventoried and all those kinds of things. Now, so finally they said, you know, this is very inefficient. So the Belvedere plant was one of the first I know of. I mean, there might have been stuff in other industries, but they call just-in-time inventory, where we're going to make, you know, 50 K cars on a Thursday. That means whoever's delivering the doors better deliver 50 left-hand doors and right-hand doors, and it better show up on Wednesday. And we're bringing them right on the line, and there's a holder there for exactly 100 doors, and we don't want to handle it twice. We're handling it once. And the whole plant was designed that way. And I'm sure it took them a while to get everybody in order. I mean, some of the stuff, you know, to make sure you don't stop the assembly line for a bolt, yeah, probably inventoried fasteners and things like that. Maybe, you know. The idea was to inventory nothing other than right to the line, to where there, like, was no warehouse. It was the idea. They owned the doors. They walk in. You brought the windshields to wherever they were supposed to be. You brought the tires where they were supposed to be. That's it. And ever since then, that's what we've had. I mean, when you've got a plant that's, that, you know, even doing drugs, I mean, it's way more complicated than surely I know, but you can't sell the drugs if the caps for this thing don't show up, or the bottles don't show up, or the labels don't show up. It's not to mention all the stuff that goes into the drug itself, right? So all that stuff has to happen kind of in perfect timing. And whenever anything gets screwed up, if one or two things don't show up, the whole thing now is messed up. And once one thing is messed up, then the other stuff starts to back up, right? So where are we going to put, Chief? Where the hell are we going to put 90 days worth of doors when we haven't done a car in 90 days because we cut the plant down? I remember at Pullman, we had to build tracks around the plant at Hammond just so we could store the trucks, the wheel and axle assembly. You walk outside and there'd be like 200 of these things, one after another, on railroad tracks, because we were a year behind the project. We had to go rent. Get a load of this. We sold this piece of crap, totally piece of crap warehouse facility, like 100. You know where that Pullman facility was, the factory? Well, back
111th.
Yeah, well, yeah. Between 103rd and 111th, if you drove back in there, Pullman was originally 55 buildings or something. And if you go back in there, you talk about sweatshops in the land of time forgot. I had to go back and do an inventory on the seats because we sold one of these warehouses to some loser who had a bunch of, I don't know what he was doing in there, making blue jeans or whatever, with a bunch of people that looked like they were getting paid very much. And we had to rent the thing back from the guy. And in like 3 months, the lease was more than we sold the building to him. it was America at its finest, right? So there's got to be 1,000 seats in this thing, 2,000. And I got to go there and count them. I'm like, nobody even knows this building. It was literally back in the woods. It was, you know, the brick on the place had to be from 1850. There's no air conditioner or nothing. I don't think there was a bathroom in the place. Well, I walk in and I'm counting these seats, and every once in a while you'd see one with like a dead rat in it or a dead cat. I'm like, for God's sake, because they must have been throwing poison on. They're all dying in the seat. This is just what we needed, right? So I couldn't wait. It was like the worst day I ever spent. It had to be 90-some degrees. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I don't think my count was too accurate either, and I didn't care. But I'm just saying. But I mean, once this starts to happen, it's a mess. Can you even imagine what a backup had to be at Boeing with these 737s? I mean, how many parts? There's got to be half a million parts on a plane? 250,000? I mean, what do you do with all that stuff? You know that was all just in time. So yeah, when you talk about these kind of things, any one thing affects everything if you're being efficient, right? Like, your human body is very efficient. You know, get rid of the heart, it ain't going so far, is it? Or the head or something, right? I mean, it's if you do things right, it's just like that. Everything works just at the same time it's supposed to work. So it doesn't take a mess up for somebody to say, oops, we get all these windshields from China and now we're not importing anything from China. Where do the K cars go? They don't go anywhere, right? And how long does it take to bring a manufacturer here up to speed, and then 2 years later, Trump's out of office and Biden doesn't care? Anybody who felt that this thing against China was a long-term situation and put together that kind of capital to make the windshields here or something like that, you got to be out of your mind, John, with the politics in this country and how quickly it changes from one to the next. I mean, man,
well, there has to be, you know, economic and political will behind it for it to develop any steam. You can't just be an executive making these decisions and expecting everybody else who's benefited from a less efficient system to turn about face and do it some other way. So there hasn't been any kind of a consensus that this is really the way the country should be producing things, that we shouldn't be dependent, we shouldn't be energy dependent. There doesn't seem to be any particular will to do anything about that as a matter of policy. And the whole climate debate and all that is just a way of dodging the issue, too. It's about getting all worked up about stuff that in the long run is less important and less crucial, you know, to what we need to be thinking about. But it's all about dodging the issue. And I agree. I mean, it's not going to be a president who could do it or who could do it for very long if you don't have people underneath him making the decisions and all the way down the supply chain to businesses and everything else. This is what we should be doing because the pushback is too entrenched now against that. So there's no worry about the fact we don't produce very much anymore and that we're obligated to do whatever we have to get it from the other places that have, their only interest really is in making us their peon in some ways. And if we are happy to be that, then there's any number of ways that can happen. But there isn't enough pushback for it to last beyond one presidential administration. I think that's true.
Well, I mean, even in my industry, I mean, an industry that obviously I still love despite all the problems that shouldn't be there because of the regulators and all the other stuff. Trump had some sort of a pushback on the regulatory stuff, and he, managed to push back a little bit, but never really reversed anything. It just sort of stopped for a while. Well, now we're right back into it. So if anybody would have thought for an instant, oh man, this is a good industry to get in. These people are overestimating the regulatory hassle and so forth. I'm going to form like a new brokerage firm or a new futures firm or something. Thinking that was any kind of a governmental resolve. Well, 2 years later, I mean, good luck with that. I mean, people ask why are the Chinese gaining on us in a lot of ways? Well, some is the slavery, some of the other stuff, but by and large, they can also make a plan that one president doesn't come in and order 15 aircraft carriers that take 10 years to build. The next guy comes in and cancels them. And the next guy says, no, I want you. That's what we're starting to have here in a lot of ways. And that is just not healthy. It is just not healthy. No matter which side you're on, that's not healthy. You can't do business like that.
I agree.
I don't know where the constant cooler heads are, but there doesn't seem to be any. Maybe somewhere in Washington there are people from the left and on the right going across the aisle and having dinner with each other somewhere and saying, okay, for the next 5 years, this is the way we have to operate. I mean, that's why people, when they talk about Congress's term should not be 2 years, or should, they got to throw Congress people out. The agriculture program is like, we do one of those, what, every 5 years? That's a 5-year project for that committee. Well, you can't be changing people in the committee every 2 years and finishing the product, can you? There needs to be some things that we have a long-term goal on. And I don't know. Do we? And anything?
I don't know. I don't. I couldn't tell you what it is.
I bet there is somewhere.
I'm afraid it's all too clear what it is, but I don't want to say that it's even been thought out that very far to be that. But it certainly seems to be. Don't talk about it. Let's not worry about it. Let's not let other people in on the fact that we don't know what we're doing here. I think that seems to be the policy.
We have a few minutes here, but I want to get your opinion. What my thought of the day is that what this bill has done is essentially taken, Illinois might be the one case, no, but all the debt that's built up in the country, not just COVID another time, and dropped it all on the federal government, and they're printing it to cover it and hoping that that's the answer, and that somehow we work our way out of it. I mean, first of all, do you think anybody actually had that plan to start with, or we just sort of got there by accident? And what do you think of it?
Well, I think it's, kind of an admission that we don't have anything bigger on the horizon that we can rely on. It's a stopgap measure. It's to buy time, I think, because people are more worried now, certainly, than they were 6 months ago about where we're headed. And this is a way of, assuaging people's doubts or worries as something that, well, we are looking out for you, and we're going to, ship you some money pretty soon, and everything's going to be better, before long. That to me is, a government that's kind of reached desperate straits, because they would rather do that than actually, let people in on how bad things are and how futile, any pushback will be given how little they let people know what we're up against. And, you know, the media has been complicit in this, too, by not, you know, holding people's feet to the fire about what this is going to cost us in the long run. And we're just adding to, you know, our great-grandchildren's tax liability. This doesn't improve anybody's, you know, ability to get ahead of the system or ahead of the curve. It doesn't make us more competitive as a country. It doesn't make us happier or healthier. But it's just a way of putting out a fire that it would otherwise be a lot worse than it is. So there's no real long-term solution to any of this. It's going to be a series of things like this, I suspect. And we'll be wrangling about how much here, how much there. But the problem is that this is no solution at all in the long run. And the worst thing would be for people to actually be told that. Because then they just say, well, what are the solutions? And then you just listen to the silence in the room, because there isn't any solution better than that right now. Nobody seems to have thought long or hard enough to come up with one anyway.
What do you think?
Well, I think
that there's a lot of economists right now, in my mind, that really don't know anything, but they have this new theory. It's not that they don't know anything. They don't, PhDs, they know more than me in a lot of ways, but there's this theory that if you can just, you can grow your way out of anything and not worry about debt. And I don't think that that is the right theory. Now, the question is, how, you know, it's the one where morals versus pragmatic. I mean, I always, my buddy who's a, you know, he's from Minnesota, not Dr. J, my buddy Howard. I mean, he's with me. He doesn't like to, you know, his druthers would not be to pony up $20 million to get a hockey team, right? But he said in Minnesota, they let the North Stars go on principle over $2 million and then realized they had screwed up, and based on the population's want of a new team, it cost them 100 times that to get a new team back. So even though your morals are, I'm not paying these idiots for their own private business, the fact is it cost them a hell of a lot more to not do it. You know, so sometimes the practical interferes somewhat with the moral. Now the question is how much? And that's the problem, you know, and we'll talk more about that next week, because that's really the clear story. I mean, do you really want to go through the next 5 years of one state receivership after another and every single municipality declaring bankruptcy? I think the answer is no. So this way they ended up doing this, not even maybe knowing that that's what they're doing. They're basically taking everybody out except them. Now, whether that becomes a massive screw-up or the right thing to do is to be determined, I think. That's what I think. I mean, do you think I'm way off?
Nope. I think that's it. I mean, maybe that's the only kind of plan you can have when you don't know what this is going to result in because you've never tried it before.
All right, John, take care of yourself, bud. Hey, is this the week you come out of the cave or what?
Right. Yep, this is the week.
Oh, God. SP Futures down 2 now. NASDAQ Futures up down 17. We were way up when we came in. Be right back. Mr. Mike Hart.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right
now, right now. Lord Wolfpack Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 3. NASDAQ Futures down 1975. Maybe Mike forgot to change his clock.
Actually, that's possible. That's a possibility.
Dow Futures up 74. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 49.2%, Shanghai down 33, that's a full percent. Hang Seng up 94.3, so these guys are not doing too much. They've been moving a percent to 2% a day, like, almost every day over there. I mean, it's really been volatile on a day-to-day basis. In Europe, we got the DAX up 1, call that flat. FTSE up 4, call that flat. CAC up 5, call that flat. So those guys were a little bit more bullish a little while ago. In a wave review of Friday, Dow Jones is up 293.9%, I believe, in a new record. S&P up 4, 39.43, that was 0.1%. NASDAQ was down 78.6%. Again, this has been the theme now for quite some time. As a matter of fact, I don't know, the new money I'm putting in, I'm actually putting some of it in the QQQs, thinking those guys have been down. I don't know if it's down enough, but they've been down compared to the other ones. And so now I'm putting some money in there. We'll see how that works out. But bonds, pretty much unchanged. 162, one minus 0.30. Japan, positive 0.11. So nothing going on there. UK actually is up 2 basis points. These guys are up a lot higher than they were. They're 0.85. They were 0.7 something a couple of weeks ago. Oil. Rail's going on there, down, well, they're down 40 cents, around 10 cents earlier. 65.21 West Texas, Brent down 36 cents, 68.86, natural gas down 6 cents, 253. RBOB unchanged at 214. Maybe the cheapest I saw anywhere was probably 289 this weekend. Frank said he was 265 in Indiana, so it's creeping. Gold was up earlier, let's see if it still is. Up 870 to 1728, silver up 24 cents. 26.15, copper unchanged at 4.14, and we got to get our crypto. Bitcoin down 38.70, but still at 56.125. So they topped over. They had to top over 60,000. Man, it must have been over the weekend because it wasn't there Friday, or it was late Friday. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're starting to see some issues pop up in the area. A significant one this morning is out in the western suburbs. Of course, it just went away on my screen, so I have to pull that back up. Well, maybe it was cleared. There was a rollover crash on the tri-state earlier this morning out in the western suburbs, and apparently that just went away. So maybe crews got that cleaned up faster than you would think. But that was a significant issue causing congestion on I-294. But apparently that is gone. No issues coming in on the Edens. Kennedy traffic starting to build as you approach the circle, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways similar as well. Off the expressways, it looks like there is an issue on Lakeshore Drive. We have an accident blocking, or actually, it's not an accident. There's traffic signals flashing red on Lakeshore Drive on the northbound side at Balbo, and that is causing some traffic to build up because of that confusion caused by those flashing lights. So keep that in mind if you're heading in that area. Off the expressways, up in the northern suburbs, there's a crash. St. Mary's Road at Old School Road. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, clouds early, much colder this week than we have been the last couple of weeks. And we could get a bit of snow, slush, and rain accumulation this afternoon, beginning about 2 or 3 o'clock. Not expecting much to stick, but temperatures will be right around the mid-30s, so right around that freezing point. and we'll see a snow and slush mix at a high of 37 today. Right now it's overcast and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 74. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, the Bulls got their first win since the All-Star break, blowing out Toronto 118-95. Blackhawks were off. They're back in action tonight down in Florida as they'll take on the Panthers. That's a 6 p.m. puck drop. Coyotes lost to the Wild 4-1 last night. College hoops, the Fighting Illini are your Big Ten tournament champions. They outlasted Ohio State 91-88 in overtime. Illinois is a number one seed, and they'll take on number 16, Drexel. Loyola is in the tournament at a number eight seed, and they'll take on number nine, Georgia Tech. Should they win, and should Illinois win, they'll face off in the second round. So that's exciting. Looking forward to that potential matchup. Other number one seeds, Gonzaga was the number one overall in the tournament. Baylor and Michigan were the other two number one seeds. Some Big Ten teams got in, as we talked about last hour. Iowa and Ohio State are both number two seeds. So Big Ten has two number ones and two number twos.
That's really good.
Pretty strong. Purdue, a number four seed, they're very good as well. And then some of the teams that barely got in, Wisconsin at nine, Maryland and Rutgers are 10 seeds, and Michigan State is an 11 as one of the four play-in games. Chief.
I'm going to say Michigan State is the strongest 11 I've ever seen.
Yes, I would agree. That's a team that was top five in the country at the beginning of the year. Then they had a couple of COVID issues, underachieved a little bit, and they're starting to play a lot better and earn their way back into the tournament, and now I think they're pretty scary.
What's the lowest seed that's ever won?
I think Connecticut was a four seed, and they won it all. I think that's the lowest that's ever won. I'm sure I can find that real quick. I remember that team pretty well. They were led by Kemba Walker, who's now a very good NBA player, and they just got hot, and he was an NBA player that couldn't be stopped, basically, and they had, you know, they're always talented at Connecticut, and they just got it going, and no one could beat them. But I think they were a four seed. I don't know if a lower seed.
Didn't they have a couple of teams in front of them just fall out early? Was that the year that the number one got beat or number two got beat or something in the first round?
That's possible. Well, number one's only lost once in the first round in the history of the tournament.
That was a couple years ago
when Virginia lost. Okay, so Villanova is still from, you know, back in 85, is still the lowest seed ever.
That was the guy who's dead, right? Died from cancer?
Yeah.
No, he was...
No, Valvano is who you're thinking of. Yeah, he was NC State.
That's right. That's right, Villanova was... who was the coach there? I forget.
That was Massimino?
Yeah. Is there anybody who...
So a total of three number 11s have advanced to the Final Four. LSU in 86, George Mason in 2006, and VCU in 2011. All three lost in their semifinal game. The lowest seed to go all the way and win the national championship was that 1985 Villanova squad, which was an 8 seed, which is crazy.
Was that when Shaq was at LSU?
Shaq was at LSU in 92, so no.
Okay.
Like 91, 92, yeah.
Is there any teams that absolutely got skunked where they lost their... They should have been the team to go, but lost their playoff or the tournament this year. It seemed like I didn't hear of anybody like that.
Meaning a team that would have made the tournament, but they were a smaller school, so they lost in their conference tournament.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a few of those. Yeah,
but nobody was like Loyola would have lost. Would have been a
Loyola was still in even if they would have lost.
Yeah.
Drake lost in to Loyola in their conference tournament. They still got in as one of the play-in games. Wichita State got in as one of the play-in games, and because they lost their conference tournament, so those were a couple of the examples.
What is the is the money different this year? I mean, the NCAA is. I mean, clearly, there's not much in the way of crowds. They have a few people in Indiana, right? Was it just family?
The NCAA tournament's allowing 25% fans.
Right, so but the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis didn't have any fans. It just had family and friends, right?
No, it had fans.
All right, I thought I saw family and stuff.
Yeah, it had fans for the first time, and the players were talking about it. It was the first time they'd played. The Big Ten had played in front of fans all year, it was a small number, but they were loud. If I had to guess, in that big Lucas Oil Stadium, there's maybe 5,000 or 6,000 fans, something like that.
Well, plus you can hear individual idiots yelling.
Right.
That's what it always struck me about spring training is. I mean, if you want to be a big mouth knucklehead and you're in the center field bleachers of Wrigley Field, nobody really cares when there's 40,000 people there. But if you want to be a big mouth knucklehead in spring training, there's nobody there. Everybody can hear everything you say. makes it like even worse. That's all right, because there's nobody to intercept the big mouthed stuff. Hey, we're not gonna. I think Mike had a late breaking meeting, so he's not gonna call in. But you and I, you think we should go further on this Microsoft thing? It seems to be our guys are convinced, Kevin and Carl, that it's a bigger deal. Kind of just starting. It's not over. Have you?
Well, I don't know a ton about it because I haven't read a ton about it. But from what I've read, it seemed it was very well organized by some sort of hacking groups. They think based out of China, and the early indications were that it could be much bigger than what they initially thought.
Because Kevin and Carl were giving me some kind of a.
But I do know that Microsoft has released a bunch of security patches, and that where they're saying, you know, the sooner you put these in, the better, and that they believe it's going to, you know, stop the bleeding.
What is? I mean, again, I don't know that much about this stuff, but I know when I did a tour of the one of our ethanol plants, right? It was in Freeport. Boy, what a fantastic place! I mean, God, and in these guys, they had two computers sitting there, two guys sitting there with Packer hats on, right? They look like two Wisconsin guys because it's right by the border. So they're sitting there, and they're by these computer screens. It didn't look like our computer screens, man. The things are huge. They could run everything in the place. There had to be, I don't know how many thousand valves for letting stuff go. It was like the inside of a battleship, for God's sake, with all the pipes and valves all over the place. They could handle any valve from the computer spot, and if something didn't work, you could get to the valve somehow by like a ladder or something. And I said to the guy, this is a long time ago, I said, well, so when you run this place, I mean, how secure is it? He goes, the only way that you can move anything in this building is from those two seats. If you don't want to do it manually. We are never going to push into the, he didn't even know what the cloud was at that time. We're never going to be online. We're never going to be anything like that. If you want to run this plant, you run it from here. And I guess, you know, I don't know how practical that is for other stuff, but for like plants and things like that, some places, why does everybody have to be in the cloud and send your stuff to other people and then wonder why they get there's a problem? And there has to be some places that are so big and so, you know, all over the country and everything, there's no way you can do it internally. But I think a lot of places that could do it internally somehow don't. I mean, does the Pentagon have to be that wide open where people can hack from the outside? Why, just because generals can need to work at home? I mean, I guess I don't know. Is it open enough, so open now that it's foolish, in your opinion, or not? I mean,
well, it certainly is less safe, but companies are, you know, big companies anyway, are global now. And so, you know, you're going to have situations where people are all over the world, and they have to be able to log in somehow and to work. They're not all, it's not a 10-employee situation going
well,
into an
it.
Office. I mean,
I guess
if you have 2,000 employees, or 5,000, or 50,000, or 100,000 employees, what else are you going to do?
I mean, but does your customer list, complete with their credit cards, have to be in the cloud?
Well, it shouldn't be. It never should be. You should never store a list of credit card numbers.
Okay, but I'm saying, I mean,
yeah, that's a direct violation of payment card industry compliance and all kinds of things. Now, there are situations where, if you have some sort of subscription where you're keeping a card number on file, it has to be completely encrypted. It has to be segmented from, you know, the rest of your environment, so that, you know, your environment that has all your computers coming into it, or people VPN dialing in remotely, that has to be completely segmented from any sort of place where you're storing credit cards, and then furthermore, those credit cards all have to be encrypted. If you have a situation where credit cards are accessible, then that would be a huge violation, and you would fail any audit.
Well, so what is the difference now? The people who stream Stacks and Jacks, now that's, I have my credit card there, all right, without giving their name. So when I get the bill every month, it'll just say use credit card on file, and I go yes. Now other places, like if you buy some shirts and Duluth Trading, they'll say, give us the credit card number, we don't keep anything here. What's the difference? One's a subscription and one isn't?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're doing it for convenience if it's a subscription service. So, you know, if you have Spotify, or like you said, you're paying for a streaming service and they're running the same card every month, it for convenience, they're saying we'll store this card for you, and then we'll charge it. And it's convenient for them too, because you know if they had to ask you for your credit card number every month, you might cancel.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But if they keep it on file and they automatically charge it, it's convenient for you. You don't have to give your credit card. It's convenient for them. They don't have to essentially make a new sale every 30 days. They can just kind of keep in the background charging.
Like my Tribune electronically and all those places, the Wall Street Journal, they all they
exactly.
All
but they're under strict compliance guidelines for storing that information.
That's what they use you guys for.
Right. It has to be completely encrypted. It has to be segmented, et cetera.
All right. And then they would have somebody like your firm.
Right. That is going to... Our firm is either going to sell you security solutions on site, you know, firewalls and things like that, or we're going to manage it from our site. We're going to set up boxes on your site and then manage it. And we're going to, you know, companies like us will do the on-site audits where we're going to come in and make sure we're going to check all the controls and make sure that it is properly set up, it is segmented, it is password protected, it is encrypted, all that stuff.
Well, let me show you how little I know about this. I know when you just plan to get hacked. You know, you get hacked, but then they put people put different stuff on your computer that they used to call what? It was stuff that you know, you can get software that supposedly goes and looks for it. What's ransomware?
So it's any sort of you know, malware that is put on your system, and they call it ransomware because they essentially will reach out to you and say, you know, give us this and we'll remove it. As a ransom.
Oh, okay.
So you see that all the time where, you know, a hacker group is able to hack into a big company and they'll say, you know, save yourself the embarrassment and the fines and the brand, you know, damage reputation, et cetera, and pay us, you know, $5 million by, you know, Monday night or something like that.
Hence the name ransom, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And then the company will make a decision. Do I report this and go public and hurt my brand and, you know, maybe get hit with tons of fines and penalties? Or do I pay these guys and then hope that they're you know, true to their word and they'll take the malware off my system? That's at its simplest form. But, yeah, that's
now, if you call the authorities, are they all over it or they say it's your problem?
I don't know who they is, but...
Well, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people that have had, you know, a lot of crazy stuff where people get money got hacked out of either security, not securities accounts necessarily, but everybody I know, every securities firm has had some kind of a hack where somebody managed to get, you know, made believe they were somebody they weren't and that kind of thing, or somebody broke into somebody's home computer and, you know, ordered a check out of their account and they're using the same computer and the same password, because every place I know has had at least one of those issues, every bank. And every one of them that goes to the government says it's not our problem, it's yours. I mean, which is one of the reasons why it's growing so much, I think. But every bank has had those problems of some kind. And the FBI's response is that's your problem, I think. That was the same way in this sort of thing, or no? You should have had more guys like you all over it. Don't talk to us.
Well, I mean, as it stands right now, the Chicago Police Department doesn't have a sophisticated cybersecurity division.
They got nobody.
Exactly. So if you're a business and if someone broke into your business with guns out and robbed you, you would call the Chicago Police Department. But if someone broke into your business online and hacked your system and robbed you in a different way, you could not call them. They couldn't help you. And in some cases, the FBI maybe has a more sophisticated division. If it reaches a certain threshold, if it's big enough, they may take your case. Whatever that number is, if it's over, you know, $500,000 or $1 million or a certain number of credit card numbers, I don't know. Other than that, you're sort of on your own, and you almost have to work with a cybersecurity company or something like that to help protect you. But you're hopefully insured in some way that you're protected. Otherwise, yeah, you might have your doors closed.
Well, what in your estimation, how much in terms of you know, smacking an old lady over the head and stealing her purse? Which obviously you don't want to have happen. What percentage of the money stolen now is stolen online versus regular robberies and stuff, would you say?
I would say 99.9%.
And yet your police departments and those people say we don't chase it.
Well, they'd have to hire guys that are making tons and tons of, I mean, the people that we hire out of India and China and even in the U.S., that are the young up and coming guys that do our white hat ethical hacking. So big companies pay us to try and hack into their system. And so we can find out vulnerabilities and write a report and show them, here's what you need to do to protect this. Those guys are not cheap. And, they can make a lot of money in the private sector. Like, it seems to me that, you know, unless you're willing to pay them a ton of money to come work for you and build a cybersecurity division in your local police department, we're a long way from that.
Well, but somewhere between the state, the county, the city, and the bazillion police people we have in the state of Illinois, you would think that out of all those people, to not have 30 people doing what you're saying you're doing is pretty bizarre, when that's where all the money is.
Kevin, with a good note here, he says, the best defense against ransomware is a good current backup of your systems. Then, instead of paying the ransom, you can blow away your system and rebuild it. And with practice, you can meet a recovery time objective that minimizes harm to the business, which is exactly right. And the good companies that have a good sort of chief technology, chief information security type division within their organization do this stuff all the time. They build their disaster recovery plan, and it's completely based around backing everything up and being able to pivot to a backup system in a very short period of time. If and when you do get hacked and there is some sort of ransom situation, you can just say, screw it, blow it up, keep it, and we won't miss a beat.
Well,
but a lot of companies over the last 5 to 10 years have moved to that level of preparedness, but a lot of companies still haven't.
Obviously, Microsoft didn't, or something went wrong there. But
in Microsoft's defense, you know, one of the largest companies in the world, they were able to issue patches and everything within a week or two. That's not great. It's not perfect.
So I should stop putting off my patches. They keep sending me till the next day. I should get it done.
You really should. Yeah.
All right. What are you? Sports part of this bill? I have not heard. The sports teams and so forth. Are they? I bet they are. I bet they're getting money from the government.
Sports teams, as far as pertaining to the COVID, the CARES Act.
Yeah.
I bet they are. I don't know for sure, but I bet they are.
I was in a matter of fact, eating a pizza the other night with my lovely significant other, and started talking to the owner of the pizza place, because she's known him forever, because the pizza place used to be where she used to live on Archery Avenue. And he was saying that there's a second piece of this, is the employee retention piece of it or something. And if you've been shut down at all, forced to shut down, like Major League Baseball was, you get tax credits for like all kinds of stuff. And I'll bet those guys are all over it. I would be if I was them. But I think everybody's going to end up with. Of course, if like I said before, if you give everybody that has a dollar, an extra dollar, then all of a sudden all you've done is debase your currency and everybody just owes more in taxes.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's kind of where they're at, but, cause Major League, what do you think Major League Baseball lost this year? I heard.
I think they were hit more than any other sport.
I think so too. I've heard.
Cause they play 81 home games as opposed to, you know, 40 or 8. Depending on, you know, compared to the other major sports. And they don't have the huge lucrative TV deal like some of the other ones do, or streaming deal like some of the other ones do. So I think they got murdered.
Well, they paid the players.
Plus, that's the only sporting event where you might buy 8 beers.
You know? Yeah.
You're not going to a Bulls game and buying 8 beers in a 2-hour game at the United Center. But, man, you sit at Wrigley Field or Sox Park for 3.5 hours on a summer day or night, you're buying you're spending a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I should have saved it, but I didn't. I thought I might email it to you. They were talking about which crowd now. Is it the Mets crowd now or something that has somebody in New York, Yankee Stadium, and the Mets, they average like 2 beers a person. Everybody else is like 1.8 or 1.9 or something.
I probably average more than that, but getting harder and harder to buy a ton of beers when, you know, you go to a game with, you know, 3 buddies or something, or 2 couples or whatever, and it's 4 people, and you buy a round, and a round is $50.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
Well, I mean, it's the Sox are what? They're $10.50 a beer? Or something ridiculous like that?
It's something like that. I was gonna say like $9.75. I can't remember. But yeah. And that's for like the cheap, you know, the Bud Light or the Old Style or something. If you get anything premium, then it's 12 or 13 bucks a beer.
You're not buying your buddy's premium.
Hell no. I don't even like premium.
I don't even, especially when it's hot, I don't. That's for sure. SP futures down a buck and a half. NASDAQ futures down two. We already had an interesting morning, an interesting weekend in Bitcoin, up to a record and then way down. I got a feeling we're going to have an interesting week. Tomorrow morning show, I bet we have all kinds of weird stuff to talk about. I just get the feeling. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.